Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as The New York Times, The News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website laughgaff.com. Question number one, who composed The Four Seasons? Was that A, Frankie Valli? Was it B, Antonio Vivaldi? Was it C, Glenn Miller? Or was it D, Loretta Lynn? The Four Seasons. So, who composed those concertos? And question number two, whose nickname came from the term satchel mouth? Was that A, Louis Armstrong? B, Hank Williams? C, Enrico Caruso? Or D, Mick Jagger? So, which singer's nickname is from the term satchel mouth? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of November the 15th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1988, that Stan Love, former Beach Boys manager and the brother of lead singer Mike Love, was sentenced to 5 years probation for embezzling more than $300,000 from the band. 1988. And it was on this day, back in 1959, that the musical The Sound of Music opened on Broadway at the Lunt-Fontanne Theater, 60 years ago today. Bonnie Raitt's Too Soon to Tell introduces our country music news. It's an article entitled Bonnie Raitt and Brandi Carlile. She illuminated the path I could have, Carlile says, as she sits down with her hero for the first time. She taught me I could lead and not apologize. This article is written by Patrick Doyle and published in Rolling Stone magazine, November 2019 issue. On a recent L.A. afternoon, Brandi Carlile is talking about the moment when everything changed for her. It was the 2019 Grammys, when she played her ballad, The Joke, live and took home 3 awards. I was 39, kind of an outlier underdog character, says Carlile. That week, her 6th album, By the Way I Forgive You, went to number 22. She recently sold out Madison Square Garden. I went on vacation, never put down my phone, she says of the awards show aftermath. I was obsessed. I've been there, says Bonnie Raitt, sitting across from her. In 1989, Raitt released her 10th album, Nick of Time. It sold more than 5 million copies and won the Grammy for Album of the Year, making her a superstar at age 40. You're in hyperspace after that, Raitt says. Hard-won success is only the beginning of the similarities between the two artists. In addition to building cult followings, both have used their music as a platform for activism. Raitt has campaigned for clean energy, Native American rights, and more over the years. Carlile has raised money for kids affected by war and for imprisoned women. Bonnie illuminated the path I could have, says Carlile. Before the interview is over, Carlile has one request. If you could just teach me one or two slide guitar licks. Raid responds, it would be my pleasure. I get so much acclaim for doing stuff that sounds like woo. As she slides up on the air guitar, Carlisle is ecstatic. You've got to be kidding me.
But right now, it's just too soon to tell.
Brandy, how did you first hear Bonnie's music? Carlisle responds, I remember singing Something to Talk About all the time as a kid. One of my most significant times was when I moved out of the house and in with my first girlfriend, Jessica. I was 19 and we were huge fans and we wanted to go listen to you play and we couldn't get a ticket. So we sat outside the fence and listened to your voice reverberate around Washington State. It was a big moment, a beautiful memory. Rate responds, that's so sweet. I would have let you in if I'd known. I'm going to be a mess in this interview because I've never been with anybody that talked about me before. I haven't ever heard anyone say they were influenced by me. Bonnie, you dropped out of Harvard on tour. What did your parents say? She says, they said, you're on your own. It was just a sideline until I went back to college. I was singing blues stuff, singer-songwriter stuff, James Taylor stuff. I was cheap. I could carry my own guitar. I wasn't threatening to the male acts. I said, this is great. I can open for John Hammond, Muddy Waters, and go back to college. I was just at the right place at the right time. Then I got offered a deal. Carlisle adds, you hear Bonnie Raitt's stories and men tell them about how you're tougher than anyone else. You hear about this kind of rugged, road-weary woman that's just throwing down the gauntlet and overworked the men. I've heard those stories for years. Then the article skips down. Bonnie, what excites you about today's music? She responds, there's never been more women that do country or country-tinged music in my life. There's an amazing list of women out there that are just killing it. Article skips down, ends with this. What's next for the two of you? Carlisle responds, we're getting over to Joni Mitchell's house. It's going to be fun because she's really struggled since the aneurysm. She swore off music. But we've been doing these get-togethers at her house. We drink wine, she tells stories, and we play music. I played my song, Cannonball, and I was shaking. I brought Hozier, and he played a song, and Chaka Khan walks in. She's cracking everybody up, stealing people's wine. Joni got real loose when that happened. She thought it was funny someone wasn't nervous. We sang a CSN song, and Chaka threw a fourth part on top. Then Herbie Hancock walks in. I think it was Joni's cruel surprise. To make these kids squirm, he sits at the piano, and he's hovering on this chord. Nobody knew what it was, but Joni did. And from the middle of the room, you hear, summertime, and the living is easy. And it's Joni Mitchell, singing for the first time since her aneurysm. Rate concludes with this, I don't get to see her very much. We had some classic hangs at my house in the 70s, one time with Jackson Brown and Graham Nash. It's just a thrill for me to be back in the musical setting with her. Yo-Yo Ma performing Bach's Cello Suite No. 1 introduces our classical music news. It's an article entitled, One Man and a Cello on a Mission to Change the World. This is written by Peter McCollum and published on the 5th of November 2019 in smh.com.au. It's a review of the Bach Project, Yo-Yo Ma, and it's given 5 out of possible 5 stars. Sydney Opera House, November 4th. A bare stage, single chair. No flowers or clutter. Nothing but a solitary great cellist playing Bach was sufficient to concentrate the minds of 2,500 people for a hushed 100 minutes. Yo-Yo Ma played Bach's 6 suites for solo cello without a break, without leaving the stage, indeed without so much as a glass of water or wiped brow. Article skips down, ends with this. In the Bach Project, Ma plays Bach suites in 36 locations, each followed by a day of action. In Sydney's case, a gathering to discuss rising temperatures. The aim is for culture to connect people, as it did for the 2,500 who unanimously leapt to their feet at the close.
Of pain. Fall down my face.
Jazz and blues music news. We have this article entitled The Melodies of Our Lives. And this is published in AARP, the magazine Real Possibilities, September 2019 issue, written by Tim Appello. Hitsville came out on August 24th. What was it like to be a Motown insider? Founder Berry Gordon's Showtime documentary is packed with interviews and rare footage, including Stevie Wonder at age 11, Michael Jackson at 9, and Diana Ross's group, called the No-Hit Supremes, until they recorded Where Did Our Love Go? Gordy, 89, says he hires jazz men because they're smarter than normal musicians.
Ooh, and I just can't carry.
And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, The Exec Helping a Classic Guitar Brand Thrive in a New Era. And this is about Andy Mooney, CEO of Fender. And this is published in Rolling Stone magazine, October 2019, issue by Amy Wang. When Andy Mooney took the helm at Fender 4 years ago, he had to grapple with a vexing question. How do you sell more guitars at a time when retail stores are shuttering and guitar-based music is slipping off the charts? Under Mooney's leadership, the company found a whole new way to bolster its line of instruments. Online guitar lessons, charged on a monthly subscription basis. The service, called Fender Play, grew out of the findings of a survey that saw an immense untapped market in young people, particularly young women, who wanted to learn to play an instrument but hadn't yet been offered an accessible and affordable way to do it. In 2 years, Fender Play has already reached 115,000 active users. The success of Fender Play has come with some surprising discoveries. The original premise was that the audience would be predominantly young players, Mooney says. But in fact, half the audience has proven to be older people, empty nesters, who have maybe tried to play the guitar before and are picking it back up now that they have the time and the money. The growth in subscription guitar lessons has also contributed to an uptick in Fender's guitar business. No easy feat at a time when rock has long since ceded its pop culture dominance to hip-hop.
diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew.
Janis Joplin's Me and Bobby McGee introduces our rock and pop music news. This is an article entitled Rediscovering Janis Joplin. A new biography of the singer offers essential insight into the life and music of rock's first female superstar. This is written by John Dolan, published in Rolling Stone magazine, November 2019 issue. It's been nearly half a century since her tragic death at 27 from an accidental overdose, but Janis Joplin's life and music are still hugely resonant. In her landmark new biography, Janis, writer Holly George Warren cites Pink, Amy Winehouse, Lady Gaga, and Lucinda Williams among the many artists who have been influenced by the first female rock star's courageous passion, earthy, genre-defined sound, and self-emptying vocal power. Joplin was a white kid from a small town in Texas who fell in love with the blues and went on to define the liberating spirit of San Francisco's psychedelic scene in the late 60s, growing in leaps as an artist during her brief career, even as she fought the era's chauvinism and her own demons. She embraced life with a joyous ferocity, though she could never escape a fundamental darkness, writes George Warren. Joplin grew up in Port Arthur, Texas during the 50s and early 60s, a tomboy who ripped off her shirt to roughhouse with the neighborhood boys. Influenced by her nonconformist father, she was soon pursuing a beatnik lifestyle and singing Bessie Smith covers for coffee shop folk crowds. Janis seems, and it teems, with awestruck descriptions of her singing and the complex, often troubled person behind it. Janis always had this thing of total insecurity and total power at the same time, recalls a bandmate in the pioneering Bay Area blues rock band, Big Brother and the Holding Company. Big Brother said at the Monterey Pop Festival in June 67, made Joplin a superstar. Haight Ashbury's first pinup, as she dubbed herself. But by boldly putting herself out there in a male-dominated rock scene, Joplin endured sexism that now seems almost primordial. The author's main focus is Joplin's increasingly ambitious music, vibrant personality, and hard emotional journey. After leaving Big Brother, Joplin patterned a mix of blues, souls, rock, and country that culminated in her classic 1971 album, Pearl, released just months after her death. Throughout the book, Joplin's own voice comes alive via old interviews, accounts from friends and peers, and most movingly, in letters to her parents in Texas, describing everything from the thrill of playing live to the process of mixing an album. Played a hippie party in Golden Gate Park yesterday, she wrote home in early 1967. Her family's disapproval of her hippie lifestyle led to a fracture that would play a large role in pushing her deeper into an aloneness she responded to by falling further into drugs, which she claimed helped to bury all of her thoughts and deaden her from the world. It's a heartbreaking admission coming from someone who gave the world so much. Sylvan Esso's Coffee introduces our local music news. It's an article entitled Happening Now. Sylvan Esso, Nick Sanborn, Amelia Meath, and friends play Deepak. This is published in Walter Magazine, November 2019 issue by Shelby Polk. Right after the release of their Grammy-nominated album, What Now?, Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn of Sylvanesso felt a little stagnant. Sanborn said they had gotten too wrapped up in the minute details of production and lost sight of the forest for the trees. I think it's easy, especially for a band like ours, to get lost in what the songs sound like instead of what they actually are, Sanborn says. So they broke the songs all the way down. Instead of coasting on the success of the album, Meath and Sanborn took a group of musician friends out to the mountains to see what the electronic pop duo might sound like as a full band. And it worked. They ended up recording a few songs for the Echo Mountain session, and Meath and Sanborn are about to hit the road for Sylvanesso's With Tour, a short tour with a much bigger band that will finish up in the Durham Performing Arts Center with performances coming up this month, November 22nd and 23rd. It's kind of this fun experiment of seeing what the band would sound like as a 10-piece instead of a 2-piece, Sanborn says. Sanborn says that the songs won't be unrecognizable, but he and Meath are very open to seeing what comes out of the upcoming rehearsals. As far as we could stretch the songs, they still sounded like the songs, he says. I'm kind of curious myself to see how it goes. Sylvanesso was born out of the same kind of adventurous collaboration. A few years ago, solo artist Meath thought it would be fun to see what Sanborn would do with one of her songs, and now, as the duo Sylvanesso, they have two successful albums, a near-constant tour schedule, and a Grammy nomination. Sanborn said they both believe that experimentation is crucial. In addition to finishing a record, Meath and Sanborn are currently building a recording studio in Chapel Hill. Sanborn says that he loves that there are musicians operating in North Carolina who create everything from bluegrass to indie rock to hip-hop that give aspiring artists something to look up to. To me, we're a deeply North Carolinian band, Sanborn says. One thing I love about the creative community here and the music that comes from here is that everyone is operating on a very high level, and they're all doing completely different things. The duo hopes to encourage the local music scene with this studio, and Sanborn says they intend to make it a place where things are always happening, but you wouldn't need to worry about whether or not it would turn a profit. It was explicitly to keep that kind of vibe going, where the rising tide could rise all of the ships together, he says. Meath and Sanborn's involvement in other projects and genres might be what gives Sylvanesso such a cross-genre appeal. Many Sylvanesso songs are exactly the kind of bouncy electronic pop you'd want to hear during a workout or a night out. But sing along for long enough and you realize the songs are not always what they seem. That fun bop about the radio? It's also a meditation on the artifice of performance, even in everyday life, and the cost of attention. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, who composed the Four Seasons? Was that A, Frankie Valli? Was it B, Antonio Vivaldi, C, Glenn Miller, or D, Loretta Lynn? And the correct answer is answer B, Antonio Vivaldi. As noted in lumenlearning.com, The Four Seasons is a set of four violin concertos by Antonio Vivaldi. Composed in 1725, The Four Seasons is Vivaldi's best-known work and is among the most popular pieces in the classical music repertoire. The texture of each concerto is varied, each resembling its respective season. For example, winter is peppered with silvery pizzicato notes from the high strings, calling to mind icy rain, whereas summer evokes a thunderstorm in its final movement, which is why the movement is often called storm. Vivaldi dedicated their publication to a Bohemian patron, although his dedication may have been closely related to the completion of a monastery that year, where Vivaldi was a priest himself. And the answer to our second question, whose nickname came from the term satchel mouth? Was that A, Louis Armstrong, B, Hank Williams, C, Enrico Caruso, or D, Mick Jagger? Correct answer A, Louis Armstrong, who was known by his nickname Satchmo. As noted in Quora.com, one legend has it that as a young kid, Armstrong had a job in where he would go around delivering newspapers. People would give him coins and tips. He would put the coins in his mouth throughout the day to hold them, since he didn't have pockets in his clothes he was wearing. It was said that he used his mouth as a satchel, so that's where Satchmo comes from. Another story is that a British reporter asked Armstrong if he had a nickname, and he said Satchel Mouth. But because of the reporter's unfamiliarity with the New Orleans dialect, he heard and subsequently reported Satchmo. It was also possible that his future wife nicknamed him, although he might have come up with it himself, since he liked using slang terms, many of which caught on among jazz musicians and the public at large. Cats for jazz musicians, for example, was his. Jazz musicians and others who had great respect for and better familiarity with Armstrong, however, simply called him Pops. So let's leave today's program with Pops and a kiss to build a dream on.
Yes, give me a kiss to build a dream on. My imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. Kiss to build a dream on.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long. Until next time.
Give me your lips for just a moment. My imagination will make that moment live. Give me what you alone can give. Kiss the bill, the dream.